The Senate moves to ease restrictions on banks. From Marketplace in Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams in for David Brancaccio. A bipartisan group of senators has announced that they're planning to roll back regulations on small and regional banks, as well as credit unions. The senators are writing a bill that would exempt smaller banks from certain requirements from the Federal Reserve. Marketplace's Mariel Segura is here with us live. Mariel, what would this plan do?
Well, after the financial crisis, Congress passed a law, Dodd-Frank, that led to all these new rules banks of a certain size had to follow. They have to pass a test every year showing they can withstand certain economic shocks. The tests run the bank's financials through these worst-case economic scenarios like high unemployment. Banks also have to show they have a certain amount of money on their books to protect them against losses. Right now, the threshold for complying with these rules is $50 billion in assets. This plan says the Senate would raise that bar to $100 billion and for some of the rules to $250 billion. And that's just one of many proposals in there.
And what's the argument for doing this?
Well, it's been a long time coming. Republicans, some Democrats, and also the banks themselves have said, you know, smaller and regional banks are not a risk to the overall economy in the same way that a trillion-dollar bank is. And yet they have to follow these expensive and time-consuming rules. So advocates say rolling those back would save banks money, which they could then lend to businesses, and that businesses would in turn be able to grow and to hire more people. It's not clear that's how things would go down. You know, demand for business loans has actually been weak lately. And in general, consumer advocates and some Democrats worry about making the banking system riskier.
Marketplace's Mariel Segura. Thanks. Let's do the numbers. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are mixed ahead of the market open here. The S&P is down. The Dow is down. NASDAQ is up. The FTSE in London is up about less than a tenth of a percent. $15 billion a year. That's about how much historically black colleges and universities contribute to the U.S. economy, according to a new study released by the United Negro College Fund and conducted by the University of Georgia. The report is part of a bigger strategy to highlight the relevance of these institutions, often referred to as HBCUs. Marketplace's Rima Crace reports.
Lots of people question if HBCUs should still exist, and that gets tiring, says Brian Bridges of the United Negro College Fund.
These are institutions that have to validate their existence every day. Other institutions don't have to do that.
So his group is launching a campaign, hashtag change the narrative, to get people talking about the economic value of HBCUs. Bridges says the country's roughly 100 schools account for almost 20% of the bachelor's degrees earned by African Americans, and they inject millions into surrounding economies.
Without these institutions, there goes 134,000 jobs each year that they provide.
Mary Beth Gassman is an education professor at the University of Pennsylvania. She says earlier this year, President Donald Trump promised college leaders that their schools would be a priority for his administration.
But very quickly, I think they realized that was done as a photo op and that there's really nothing there.
Still, it looks like those economic contribution numbers could go up. Gassman says most schools are seeing an uptick in freshman enrollment, driven in part by the political climate. I'm Rima Crace for Marketplace.
Nursing shortages are forcing hospitals to close beds, hire temporary nurses at great expense, and possibly provide less than optimal care to patients. The problem is not just that people aren't going into nursing, but also that existing nurses aren't going into education. West Virginia Public Broadcasting's Kara Lofton reports.
Anna Kent is a certified nurse practitioner who works as a midwife. As part of her job, she supervises medical and graduate nursing students.
I find that teaching challenges me as a provider, and because I always have to stay on top of what's new and what's best, and I would love to teach more. There are a lot of disincentives to doing that.
The main disincentive to teach full-time is financial.
I would make about a third of what I'm making.
In West Virginia, nurse practitioners earn an average of around $93,000 a year, while nursing faculty with graduate degrees earn around $59,000. Ron Moore is the recently retired vice president for nursing at Charleston Area Medical Center.
Unless you really have a desire and a passion to be a nurse educator, we don't see people migrating to that field because of the pay.
CAMC currently has about a 300 nurse workforce shortage. Moore says without qualified nursing faculty to teach the people who want to be in a nursing program, states like West Virginia aren't going to be able to graduate enough nurses to meet the needs of its aging population. Tony DiCiacchio is president of the West Virginia Nurses Association.
So without an adequate workforce, hospitals can't function to their capacity. And we've seen that. We've seen hospitals have to close portions of a hallway or an entire floor or an entire wing when they don't have adequate RN staffing.
But nursing programs are trying new strategies to bring more people into the profession. For instance, schools are launching online nursing programs. But the reach is limited because parts of rural West Virginia don't have access to the broadband needed for students to take the classes. And Moore says CAMC launched a new Junior Nursing Academy this summer to try and get middle school students interested in the profession. But even if those students want to go into nursing when they're older, there may not be a spot for them in a nursing program. And until salaries improve for nurse educators, the shortage of teachers is unlikely to change. In Charleston, West Virginia, I'm Kara Lofton for Marketplace.
Our producers are Justin Ho, Katie Long, and Daniel Shin, and I'm Kimberly Adams with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.